Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. Coming up on the program, political interference. Did the government interfere with the RCMP investigation into Canada's worst mass murder?
This is disgusting to know that the Prime Minister and his office would use the death of Canadians for his own political gain.
There was no political interference.
We need answers.
Commissioner Brenda Luckey actually have a deal with the Prime Minister's office and the Minister of Public Safety to release information she thought would support the Liberals' gun policy. That's what allegations made by one of her own team members said. Is an inquiry now needed? MPs are jumping in to debate in just a few minutes. Then, 40-year high inflation, is a gas tax cut really the answer? As inflation hits 7.7%, the highest since 1983, when Every Breath You Take was the top of the charts, is the government avoiding a gas tax cut? We bring in Parliament's budget watchdog to weigh in on that. Plus, Hockey Canada's funding suspended. The government freezes federal funds over the organization's handling of sexual abuse allegations. What was the tipping point and what happens now? TSN's investigative reporter Rick Westhead, who broke the story, gives us new details. All that, and we hand out report cards on ministers' performances. It's report card season on Power Play. Let's get to the players. So was there political interference from the Prime Minister's office and the Minister of Public Safety's office that actually jeopardized the investigation into the worst mass shooting in Canadian history? Interference that was allegedly done to help push the Liberals' upcoming gun legislation. They only tabled it 10 days later. These explosive allegations emerged yesterday in documents released by the Mass Casualty Commission. We covered it last night. That's the inquiry looking into the 2020 tragedy where 22 people were murdered in a two-day shooting spree. This was all first reported by the Halifax Examiner. Handwritten notes from the Nova Scotia RCMP Superintendent Darren Campbell reveal that in a meeting with the Commissioner of the RCMP, Brenda Luckey, that, quote, Commissioner Luckey felt that the Nova Scotia RCMP had disobeyed her instructions to include specific information on the firearms used by the perpetrator, but Superintendent Campbell had told the RCMP force not to reveal that information out of, quote, concern that it would jeopardize the ongoing investigation. And the report gets more damning after that. According to Superintendent Campbell's handwritten notes, Commissioner Luckey stated that she had, quote, promised the Minister of Public Safety and the Prime Minister's office that the RCMP would release this information. His notes go even further, saying that the Commissioner Luckey went on to say that the Nova Scotia division didn't understand that this was all tied to the pending gun control legislation that would make officers and public safer by through this legislation. If Superintendent Campbell's notes are accurate, and that's in dispute clearly, this would amount to a case of serious political interference. And the revelations have prompted the RCMP Commissioner Brenda Luckey to late last night respond. She issued a statement saying, I did not interfere in the ongoing investigations. It is important to note that the sharing of information and briefings with the Minister of Public Safety are necessary, particularly during a mass shooting. I take the principle of police independence extremely seriously, and it has been and will continue to be fully respected in all interactions. But her denials hardly answered the main questions. Either the superintendent is not telling the truth in his notes, or the RCMP commissioner is not telling the truth now. Conservatives are calling for a full investigation into Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and the former Public Safety Minister Bill Blair's role in the affair. Check this out.
We believe there needs to be a full investigation. If the minister and the Prime Minister have nothing to hide, they'll hide nothing.
Well, Bill Blair was asked about this. He was the public safety minister at the time, and he says, no, there's no interference. Here's what he said.
But I am very, very comfortable that there was no interference in this case. I've made that statement in the House.
Okay, is an investigation needed to get to the bottom of these allegations? We did ask both Minister Bill Blair and Minister Marco Mendicino, the new public safety minister, to join us. They declined. We also asked the RCMP Commissioner Brenda Luckey to join us. She declined, but MPs are here. Joining me are Liberal MP Talib Noor Mohammed, Conservative Emergency Preparedness Critic Dane Lloyd, and NDP Public Safety Critic Alistair McGregor. Thanks for being here. Mr. Noor Mohammed, your government denies any political interference. The RCMP Commissioner denies any interference. I guess that I assume that you don't believe Superintendent Campbell, that he was lying when he took notes about the RCMP commissioners. Who do you believe? Superintendent Campbell or Brenda Luckey?
Well, we've heard today unequivocally from the minister, and we've heard from the commissioner of the RCMP, that there was no political interference. I can't speak to the correspondence or the communication between Commissioner Luckey and her staff. That is her prerogative. And the principle of operational independence that is maintained is critical here, and it's important for us to respect and to understand that that is a framework that has worked for all governments, and it continues to be very, very important that we maintain that operational independence between elected officials and the RCMP.
Yeah, but sir, of course it's important. That's why this is a story. The question is, was it actually respected? Now, you're a member of parliament. The Mass Casualty Commission, I've got it in front of me, literally says, according to the Superintendent Campbell's notes, Commissioner Luckey stated, and they quote his notes, she'd promised the Minister of Public Safety and the Prime Minister's office that the RCMP would release this information. I'm just asking you. So you're saying that somehow a superintendent in the RCMP would take a police note that is not true? Or does that intrigue you enough to support calls for an investigation to actually see if the integrity of the investigation was actually kept?
Well, I take the word of the commissioner of the RCMP at face value. She said there was no political interference. The minister has been on record in the House of Commons, outside the House of Commons, saying that there was no political interference. If the minister and the commissioner of the RCMP appear before our committee, we will do what we always have done. And I have two of my colleagues here. We work very well together. We will ask difficult questions. And I look forward to hearing the minister and the committee of the RCMP say exactly what they've already told us, that there was no political interference.
Well, of course, I mean, I'm going to go to Mr. Lloyd. Of course they're going to say that, because if they said there was political interference, they'd have to resign or they'd be fired. So they're going to say that. I guess it stands in stark contrast what Superintendent Campbell has written. Mr. Lloyd, what do you make of that, and what would you like to see in an investigation?
Absolutely. We need an investigation on this. One thing I find very interesting is that Superintendent Campbell wrote in his notes on April 28th that Commissioner Luckey told him that there will be an upcoming announcement on gun control from the government. The government made that announcement on May 4th. If the Liberals are alleging that Superintendent Campbell's notes are falsified, how would Superintendent Campbell have known that there was an announcement coming up on gun control? I think that speaks to the veracity of the notes. And so either we have a case where the commissioner is not telling the truth, or the government is not telling the truth. And if the government is not telling the truth, or the commissioner is not telling the truth, then they're basically saying that she acted alone to try to advance the partisan agenda of the government, which I think would be very inappropriate of the commissioner to do so.
Right. Now, to be fair, the Liberals had promised in the election that they were going to do gun control. I get that. And they may well have, as the commissioner of the RCMP said, talked to her about what weapons might be banned. My question to you is, what do you think needs to happen if there's an investigation? I know your party's calling for it. What are the key questions in that investigation?
Well, the key questions are, we need to break down. I think we need to get all the people that were at the meeting with the commissioner to verify what the commissioner said. And I would note that in the commissioner's statement last night, she never denied that she made a promise, as was alleged in the testimony from Superintendent Campbell. She never denied that she made a promise to the government to release this information, to interfere in this criminal investigation so that the government could advance their gun control agenda. The commissioner has never denied that. And so I think we need to get it down on the record what exactly the commissioner was asked to do, if anything, by the government, and what exactly the commissioner asked the RCMP to do in regards to this case.
Yeah, I will say, and just so our audience knows, this is not a he said, she said, Campbell versus Luckey. At that April 28th, 2020 meeting, RCMP members, the associate commissioner Bergerman was there. The chief superintendent Leather was there. Superintendent Campbell was there. Director Scanlon was there. Commissioner Luckey was there. Brian Brennan, the rep from NHQ Strategic Headquarters, was there. There's a lot of witnesses. Mr. McGregor, does your party support a full investigation?
Yes, I do. Because I led off with this in question period as well. And I furthermore support the Public Safety Committee of the House of Commons looking into this issue, because I think one thing that's really important here, Evan, is that when witnesses come before a parliamentary committee, parliamentary privilege extends to them. So their testimony is protected and they can't be held liable for it. They can't, face any repercussions from it. So it's really important that we get a full airing of this. Just on the handwritten notes, I mean, I'm often taking notes at committee so that I can refer back to them, especially after a witness's opening statement. So I do trust handwritten notes, but I don't want to lay any accusations at this moment. I just think we do need a full accusation because I think the focus needs to stay on the families that are still grieving in Nova Scotia. They deserve answers, and they deserve to know that these explosive allegations are going to be looked into.
Yeah, let me just go back to you, Mr. Nur Mohammed. These are very serious allegations. If you believe the commissioner and you believe the then Minister of Public Safety, why not have, it seems important, and your government said this in Justin Trudeau's own mandate letter, you don't just have to follow the letter of law, you have to go above it. So justice not only has to be done, but has to be perceived to be done. Why then wouldn't the Liberals support an investigation if you're so confident there was no political information and that Campbell's distorting the truth, not telling the truth, has inaccurate notes, whatever it may be, have an independent investigation, talk to all the people who were at that meeting, and make sure that the commissioner of the RCMP is not pressuring a provincial superintendent in the middle of an investigation to reveal information that he thinks will jeopardize an investigation into a mass murder in order to, frankly, help your own party's gun control legislation. Why not just clear that up?
Well, let me take a step back here, because I find it preposterous that we are saying today that somehow we decided we were going to capitalize on the mass killing of Canadians to advance something in the form of gun control that we had, that the government had been elected on in 2019 and has been part of our platform ever since. Canadians elected us to do exactly that. The timing on this is, you know, if people are saying you took advantage of something, you know, thoughts and prayers.
Timing is very convenient.
Well, let's talk about that. Thoughts and prayers after every single mass murder in the United States are not enough. What we demonstrated is that something terrible happened, and we were elected to do something. Whether or not that mass shooting, that awful tragedy which has devastated families, had happened, we were still going to move forward on this legislation because it is what Canadians elected us to do. The fact
that we responded
shows that we are actually aware of the needs of Canadians.
But, sir, respectfully, it's not preposterous to allege this. It's literally, I hope you realize, and I hope you've read the Mass Casualty Commission report, because if you think it's preposterous to raise it, I'll read you why this is being raised. It's literally in the Mass Casualty report that is investigating the mass murder of 22 Canadians. And in it, a superintendent, Campbell, who's in charge of the investigation, says that the commissioner of the RCMP stated, quote, that the Nova Scotia RCMP didn't understand that all this was tied to the pending gun control legislation that would make officers and public safer. It's the evidence, sir, in handwritten notes that is tying this to your party's gun control legislation. It's hardly preposterous, sir. It's evidence.
Well, there is evidence from one individual who has taken notes. You have the commissioner of the RCMP, the commissioner of the RCMP, who, last I checked, had the confidence of the Committee for Public Safety to do her job, saying that there was no political interference. You have a minister of the Crown saying that there was no political interference. So it is important, I think, for us to stop playing this game of continuing to undermine the institutions that keep this country safe.
But, sir, again,
That is preposterous, Evan. The idea that you cannot question the government because it could influence the institutions, the very basis of our democracy is that people have the right to question the government. And it's preposterous for that member to suggest that we can't question the government on this.
But this is the game the Conservatives play. They are now saying that the RCMP is the government. The RCMP is not the government. And it is important for us to remember that there is operational independence, and there has to be.
Right. But again, that's how it works. The whole point of this, look, I'm just going to push back, sir. This is not a game. This is the investigation into the mass murder of 22 Canadians, including a police officer, a teenager, a teacher, and a pregnant woman. And this is not a game. We're reading from a report of a serious allegation. The question is not how the system's supposed to work. The question is the system actually working as it's supposed to work? And there are serious allegations that it's not. And I'll give Mr. McGregor a chance. What do you make of this, sir? Because you haven't had a chance to weigh in.
Yeah, well, just going on the faith in our institutions, I think Canadians do deserve to have faith in our institutions. But what undermines that faith is when these kinds of allegations come forth. We would not be doing our jobs as members of parliament, elected to be here on behalf of our constituents, if we didn't hold the government to account and the various institutions that exist, in this case, under Public Safety Canada. I agree with my Liberal colleague. Yes, police are independent of the government, but it does not escape the fact that there are some explosive allegations in a handwritten note that has been formally submitted as evidence, which infers that the RCMP commissioner was interfering and that it was at the direction of the PMO. Right. I'm not saying this. This is an allegation that has been made as evidence. So we as parliamentarians, particularly in the opposition, have a duty to investigate this. And I don't see that as undermining our institutions. I see that as an effort on our part to get to the bottom of this, and in the end, with a major goal of strengthening those said institutions.
Okay, I got about 30 seconds. Mr. Lord, I just have to tag on something here. A handful of your Conservative colleagues, MPs, met with a group of Canadians who are planning to protest the remaining COVID-19 vaccine mandates in Ottawa on Canada Day. One of them is a veteran of the Canadian military, James Topp, who has walked across Canada to protest against vaccine mandates. I spoke to him for over half an hour on my national radio show. But MPs also met with a guy named Tom Marazzo. He was a leading figure and spokesperson at the trucker protest here in Ottawa. They also met with Danny Bulford, who was a spokesperson for the truckers, who regards Tamara Leach, who's being charged, as a hero, according to his Twitter account. Should we assume that when your members of parliament are meeting with these people, that they support the trucker protest, they support the planned protests on Canada Day, and they are legitimizing these leading figures from the Ottawa protests that happened back in February?
Well, thank you for the question, Evan. I don't know who these individuals are. I've heard of Mr. Topp and his walk across Canada, and I commend him for raising an issue that he thinks is important. I think it's important for Canadians, when they have an issue with what the government's doing, that they have the right to freedom of expression and that they have the right to protest within the law. And I'll always support that. But as far as the other folks, I don't know them, so I can't speak authoritatively on that. But thank you, Evan.
Well, okay, yeah, they were leading figures, Mr. Bulford and Mr. Marazzo. They were literally at the press conferences there. They were inside Parliament today meeting with members of your own party, multiple members, and they who were thanking them. So, okay, so you didn't meet with them, though. I appreciate that. But Mr. Noor Mohammed, Mr. Lloyd, Mr. McGregor, I always appreciate the three of you joining us for a good democratic discussion on all issues. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Evan.
Coming up, another inflation record leaves Canadians looking for relief. Is a gas tax solution on the horizon? They're doing it in the United States. Joe Biden's doing it. What about Justin Trudeau? Canada's parliamentary watchdog weighs in on if this thing would even work. Stay with us.
It doesn't reduce all the pain, but it would be a big help. I'm doing my part. I want the Congress, the states, and the industry to do their part as well. And let's remember how we got here. Putin invaded Ukraine. Putin invaded Ukraine with 100,000 forces. Just look at the facts. Since the start of the war in Ukraine this year, gas prices have risen by almost $2 a gallon.
That's the U.S. President Joe Biden wanting to have a gas tax holiday for Americans who are being hit hard at the pumps by inflation. Inflation catapults to another record high here in Canada, a 40-year high. It's at 7.7%, the highest since 1983. Michael Jackson had a song. I think Tom Cruise had a movie. It was Risky Business, though, not Top Gun. Statistics Canada names gas as one of the biggest factors driving inflation. It jumped by 12% in May, 48% year over year from this time last year. Canadians are paying hefty price at the grocery store. You know all this. And a new report from the Parliamentary Budget Officer points to another financial bust. That report says the Trans Mountain Expansion Project is no longer a profitable undertaking. Why? Well, costs have gone up. By how much? So to dig into the gas tax and how to give inflation relief and the inflation of the pipeline. The Parliamentary Budget Officer, Yves Giroux, joins us now. Mr. Giroux, always a pleasure. So inflation 7.7, high prices at the pump, high prices at the grocery store. There is concern that Canada's facing a recession, even though we've had good growth. In your view, first of all, did the government anticipate this level of inflation?
I don't think so, because when we look at the budget that was tabled in April, there's no indication that the government had planned for high inflation. In fact, the government's own numbers show that inflation, by their own predictions, which are based on private sector economists, were not going anywhere near 7.7% for 2022 or even 2023. So the government had penciled in much lower inflation than that, and so had most private sector economists. So it's taking many people by surprise to see headline inflation at 7.7% as released by Statistics Canada this morning.
And I say that because last week the finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, said, you know, that we have their affordability plan was everything that was already in the April budget. But just to be clear, affordability factors have changed since the assumptions in the budget. In other words, the inflation assumptions in the budget do not reflect the reality of today.
Well, that's true, but also budget 2022 looked at inflation over the entire year 2022, and the numbers that were released today are up to May. So it's not a picture for the full year. So there is still the possibility that inflation will be going down significantly between now and the end of the calendar year, which would allow budget projections to be more closely aligned with reality. But at this point, it's anybody's guess as to inflation will indeed go down significantly, or at least enough to be more aligned with budget predictions.
Gas prices are driving a lot of inflation for various reasons. The U.S. President Joe Biden now says he's considering a gas tax holiday, and he'd like to make that happen. If Canada did that, push for a holiday or a suspension of the gas tax, would that make a material difference to consumers and Canadians?
Well, it would certainly make a difference to Canadians, especially those who drive and need gas to power their vehicles. Whether that would be material is the big question. Personally, it depends how much of a decrease, but with price of gas that has gone from around $1, $1.20 a liter several months ago to $2, $2.20 a liter in many areas of the country now, reducing gas taxes by a couple of cents a liter would certainly be welcome, but whether or not it would be a material difference, I have my doubts about that, and whether it would also move the headline inflation number by a noticeable amount, it also remains to be seen. It depends the direction that other goods and services that we purchase, whether they would continue to move up or not. Yes. But certainly reducing gas taxes would not drop inflation. The 7.7% that we saw this morning would not go down significantly by a full percentage point or more, even if the government was to reduce or eliminate the gas tax.
Right, might make it better at the pump. I got less than a minute here, but your report today on the Trans Mountain Pipeline says that it's no longer a profitable undertaking, that it'll be a loss of $600 million. Can you just say, what happened to this pipeline? What's the big loss here?
Well, the big loss stems mostly from the fact that construction costs for the expansion have gone from a few billion dollars to $12 billion. And now the most recent estimate by the builder puts the cost of the expansion at $21 billion. So if the cost of building the pipeline goes up, but the revenues will not go up commensurately, so it's the same pipeline that is being built, it just costs more to build the same thing, the profit over the lifetime of the pipeline is likely to be much lower, especially considering that the tolls that the operator can charge to oil producers is regulated. So because the cost of the extension goes up does not necessarily mean that all these costs can be recouped through higher tolling.
Wow. losing money on that pipeline. That's a lot of money. But they can't write it off because, as you say, if they write it off, it would be a $14.4 billion loss. So maybe we're stuck with it. Parliamentary Budget Officer Yves Giroux, I always appreciate you joining us. I know you got lots more to say on everything, and we love having you back. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Little visitor in the House of Commons today. Amidst all the debate, the NDP leader Jagmeet Singh actually brought his daughter, Anhad, who was born January 3rd of this year. Here she is listening to her dad question the Families Minister, Karina Gould, who's brought her own child to Parliament before. Check this out. Coming up, the federal government freezes Hockey Canada's federal funding. What's at stake? TSN's Rick Westhead has the latest coming up next. You don't want to miss this. Stay with us.
The first one is that they submit the incomplete report and the recommendations and the plan how they're going to implement those recommendations to Sport Canada. And the second condition is that they sign an agreement with the new office of the Integrity and Sport Commissioner, and that they work closely with that office to improve the culture amongst the organization and end the culture of silence. And also sexual violence.
The sports minister decides to freeze Hockey Canada's federal funding in the wake of the national organization's handling of an alleged sexual assault in an out-of-court settlement. It comes just 2 days after Hockey Canada executives testified in Ottawa about allegations made by a woman who said she was sexually assaulted by 8 CHL players back in 2018. Hockey Canada quickly settled the lawsuit and claims no public money was used. But the sports minister, Pascal Saint-Ange, says the organization did not provide sufficient information in its testimony. So now what? What's at stake for the organization? Let's find out. Joining me now, TSN senior correspondent Rick Westhead. Rick, the federal government freezing Hockey Canada's funding. Give us a sense of what this decision is based on and what it means.
Well, what it means is that Hockey Canada is going to lose out on millions of dollars, at least in the short term, that it was expecting from the federal government. In 2020 and 2021, Hockey Canada received $14 million from the federal government and had an application in for another $2.2 million to help the federation come out of the COVID-19 pandemic. Pascal Saint-Ange, the sports minister, told me earlier this morning that she was not pleased with the testimony that we heard on Monday, and she has several demands. Among them, she wants Hockey Canada to become a signatory on a new federal agency which would independently accept abuse complaints, investigate them, and levy sanctions when they're needed. And that agency will be run by the SDRCC, the Sport Dispute Resolution Center of Canada.
What's Hockey Canada's position on that? Are they ready to sign on to this independent agency that would investigate abuse complaints?
We haven't heard anything from them yet on this. The testimony on Monday, Hockey Canada said that it was already trying to affect a cultural change and is building a new safe sport department and has hired a safe sport officer, presumably to conduct investigations. That doesn't seem to be good enough, though, because the move now, the best practices that we're seeing in national sports federations is for these investigations to be done outside by an independent third party. It's interesting. I had a chance to talk as well today with some of the members of Parliament who are on that Standing Committee on Canadian Heritage. They talked about their interest in having more hearings and summoning evidence, actually, from Hockey Canada. They're interested in seeing details about settlement agreements between people who are alleged survivors and the National Federation. They're also interested in understanding how provincial hockey federations across the country have handled abuse complaints. And I guess the last point to make there, they are also interested in more details on how the Federation has used non-disclosure agreements, which, we've seen and heard a lot about in the last couple of years.
Yeah, they signed a non-disclosure agreement with someone who has made these kind of allegations. They can't talk about it. There's some mysterious settlement, and this thing goes away, and nobody knows anything about it. Just before I let you go, just for some of our viewers, what was the tipping point for the government in this particular case to do this? What about this case was the tipping point?
tough to say. It's certainly not the first public allegation of sexual assault that hockey has navigated through in the last couple of years. There have been repeated instances of this. I wonder if it was just that the details were so horrific, and that's not to discount any abuse allegation over another. But when we first reported on this, that this woman in London, Ontario, had filed a lawsuit against Hockey Canada in April. The allegations are horrible. She says that 8 players repeatedly sexually assaulted her and kept her in a hotel room against her will. And I think maybe that was it, that it just really touched a nerve, not just with politicians, but also with the Canadian public wondering, well, what happened? Where's the accountability? Why was this lawsuit settled in a matter of weeks? And what happens next?
And just finally, no names of those players were ever revealed, right?
Not yet. The National Hockey League also says that it's investigating.
Yep.
Plans to interview all the players who were on that World Juniors team and who attended the gala and golf tournament in June 2018 when this incident allegedly occurred. And, again, the NHL's track record on transparency when it comes to investigations isn't terrific either.
No,
so let's wait and see whether the National Hockey League is actually forthcoming with the results of its investigation.
Okay, in the meantime, Hockey Canada's out a huge amount of money. TSN Rick Westhead, who had broke this story originally, I appreciate you joining us. Thanks.
Thank you, Evan.
Meantime, a deadly 6.1 magnitude earthquake has shaken eastern Afghanistan, killing at least 1,000 people and injuring another 1,500. The deadly quake hit a remote region close to the border of Pakistan, not far from the city of Khost. The 1,000 confirmed dead were all located in the Paktika region, although the death toll is much likely higher, sadly. Aid has been rushed to the rural area, which is difficult to access and largely cut off from the rest of the country. The quake hit last night around 1:30 a.m. local time when most people were asleep in their homes. Rescue efforts have been left up to the Taliban. Here is some other news you need to know right now. Growing demand for passports has forced so many to wait in lines for hours and now some for days.
Mom sat here. Then my husband slept here. We went inside this morning. It was very disorganized. We didn't make the cut, so we've come back out, and we're going to sleep here the night and go in tomorrow morning.
Across Canada, but especially in places like Montreal, passport applications have skyrocketed as people attempt to make summer travel plans for the first time in 2 years. This has been just a total nightmare. Meantime, the Prime Minister is in Rwanda today to meet with the heads of the Commonwealth nations. Kicking off the trip, he announced plans to open an embassy in Kigali, Rwanda for the first time. The Prime Minister will also visit Germany and Spain and is expected to return to Canada in time for Canada Day. Also today, a moving speech from the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. He delivered a virtual address to several Canadian universities. In his speech, President Zelensky reflected on the destruction his country is facing every day, saying Russia will never change Ukraine's goals of freedom and democracy. Check this out.
Today we are fighting for the future of our children and grandchildren, for the possibility and opportunity to build the new country. We already surprised the world. We've come together to do the impossible, and we shall prevail, although against all the odds, for the free and democratic future. And those will be different times. What kind of times and how this will look like, we will see together. We will.
What a remarkable man. Zelensky thanked Canada for his continuing support and the opportunity to address students and future leaders. How he had time to do that is beyond me. We continue our end-of-season grades coming up next for key cabinet ministers. Look, inflation's going up. That'll bring Minister Freeland's grade, what, up or down? How's she handling that? The press gallery is dishing on the grades. It's report card season on Power Play. Stay with us. Inflation has hit a 40-year high, 7.7% last month. You know it. You feel it at the grocery store. You feel it at the pump. The last time the Consumer Price Index was that high when, well, Tootsie topped the box office in January of 1983. Wow, Dustin Hoffman. Record high inflation not only put more pressure on the Canadian pocketbooks, it's putting pressure on Canada's finance minister, Chrystia Freeland, to actually do something to address the affordability crisis. As Canadians come face-to-face with prices, should she come face-to-face with a gas tax cut? Well, this might affect her end-of-season grade. What grade did our press gallery give to the finance minister? Let's bring them in to find out. In report card season, CTV's National News Parliamentary Bureau reporter Andy Bergeron-Oliver's here, and One Dish, One Mic co-host Carl Dockstader, the executive director of the Niagara Regional Native Centre, joins us as well. Okay, report card season, Andy. Before we get to the grades, though, inflation is going to dog this government. You saw Joe Biden today talking about a gas tax holiday. Is that something that this Liberal government's going to have to reconsider?
It might be, and Germany did the same thing as well. There's a lot of people who are looking for answers, and they want immediate help from the federal government. And with Parliament rising, there's not quite the same opportunity for the federal government to present any type of plan or to be held accountable about what they intend to do to help with affordability. And so that's going to be hard. Hopefully the Liberals have some type of communication plan for their MPs moving, because this barbecue season this summer is going to be very challenging because the barbecues that are being hosted are going to be far more expensive. Then let's not forget there is a conservative leadership race, and one of the perceived front runners, Pierre Poilievre, has been focusing on inflation, and he's going to be red hot with his aims at the Liberal government and what they have said is a lack of a plan from the Liberals to help with affordability. So this is going to be something that does not go away for the Liberals over the summer.
No, Pierre Poilievre has owned that inflation issue, Carl, and it continues to dog the Liberals. I thought it was so striking that the parliamentary budget officer, Yves Giroux, was just on the program saying the Liberals' April budget did not make these kind of assumptions about inflation. In other words, it's already essentially out of date on that. Do they need to do something like a gas tax holiday that Biden's considering?
I don't think the pressure is the same. One of the things that's weighing into Biden's calculations is the midterms that are right around the corner for the Democrats. Things don't look good for them right now, so they need to pull something out to try and get some sort of traction with the public. I think that the Liberals so far have stated that they plan to stay the course with the carbon taxes, and particularly as it applies to gas right now. So maybe they should, but I also think they've got a little bit of breathing time being so far between elections right now.
So inflation, the key thing. What grade then do you give Minister Freeland? She's involved in everything, but Annie, how do you grade her performance so far?
So I'm going to be grading the ministers today based on communication. And so for Chrystia Freeland, I'm giving her a C. And the reason is, I don't remember the last time that Chrystia Freeland has actually stopped to talk to reporters in a scrum in months. I can't remember the last time that she stopped at cabinet, she stopped at a caucus meeting, nothing. Generally, it's, puts on sunglasses and walks right by us. She did talk to the media after the budget, and she spoke at the Empire Club with a bunch of Wall Street, Bay Street people a couple weeks ago. So in terms of communication, I give her a C. And also the fact that they made this big announcement, everyone thought it was going to be some type of new inflation plan. And yet the minister came out and had nothing new to announce other than an affordability plan that was already in the budget several months prior.
Okay, yeah, we did ask her to come on the program after that. She was unavailable. Carl, your grade for her.
Well, I guess I was generous with my B minus with Chrystia Freeland. I just don't think that there are a lot of levers that the Minister of Finance should pull and could pull in this instance. So I want to give Minister Freeland a little bit of credit here. I mean, maybe there could have been some more taxing on some of the benefactors of this high income, but there also was resisting the temptation, like Premier Legault, who sent $500 relief payments, like Premier Ford, who sent the sticker rebates. I think that the restraint that was practiced by the Minister of Finance was actually a pretty good plan here.
Right. I don't think I've ever heard the word restraint and the Liberals so far in 7 years used, but okay, that could be a first. Annie, the other issue, passport offices, travel woes, mandates. Let's give a grade to the Transport Minister, Omar Al-Gabra, who's been often on the hot seat.
So I think if you ask a lot of travelers, they would absolutely give him an F. The people who are going through the airports right now are extremely frustrated at the lines. And a lot of people are saying, look, the federal government should have seen this coming. There were airports around the world that were seeing an uptick in demand at airports. Even Amsterdam's airport, I believe it was the airport itself or the transport minister, who told the airlines to stop flying as many flights because the airport was overwhelmed. So I think a lot of travelers would give him an F. I'm going to give him a B minus. And the reason is, I do have to give him credit for constantly talking to the media. At every opportunity, the minister stops, he answers as many questions as we have, and, you know, his staff will also talk to us on background and give us some advice and talk to us about what they're doing, what they're working on. So, obviously, what they're doing is not working. They are hiring more staff. More should have been done faster. They should have seen this coming. But to their credit, they are stopping, they are answering questions, and they don't shy away from that.
Yeah, he's almost always available. Carl.
Mm-hmm.
So I graded the minister more as a practicum. I watched your interview with him on Sunday. What really troubled me was the lack of an explanation around why the mandates were dropped. I saw pressure from local mayors, including my mayor here in Niagara Falls, Jim Diodati, saying to drop the mandates. And last week, the government seemed to be holding firm. And then seemingly out of nowhere, there was a switch. But I also look at it as a practicum. At a certain level, like an electrician, when they're graded, when you flip the switch, the light has to come on. Similarly, when the gates of the airport open, there was plenty of time to prepare, and nobody's going through those gates right now. So on a practical level, I actually gave the minister a D minus.
A D minus. By the way, your mayor, who I spoke to, he wants the minister to also get rid of the Arrive Can app because he says it's killing tourism. That's not going anywhere either. So tough grades on a border town where Carl is. Okay, can we just take a short break, you two? We're going to be right back. The grades are going to continue. We're going to grade the defense minister and the Crown Indigenous Relations minister. So lots to come. Stay right here with Power Play. Russia's war in Ukraine has put Canada's defense capabilities under the spotlight. We know the government just allocated over $6 billion in the most recent federal budget to reinforce defense priorities. On Monday, the National Defense Minister, Anita Anand, unveiled her $4.9 billion plan as part of that six to modernize NORAD. But even before the war in Ukraine, Minister Anand was under major pressure to address the sexual assault issues in the Canadian Armed Forces, despite a number of reports and recommendations. So what grade will the press gallery give the Minister of Defense and others? The press gallery is back. CTV's Annie Bergeron Oliver is back. And Carl Dockstader, the co-host of One Dish, One Mic, is back. Annie, your grade for the Defense Minister, Anita Anand.
So I'm giving her a B minus. Look, I think when she took over this portfolio, there was a lot of hope and enthusiasm that this minister would be able to change D&D, change the culture, and really take sexual misconduct seriously. And there has been a lot of work done, and that's progress. And a lot of people who are in the military feel like she really is taking this issue seriously, and she does really want to see change, although they would like this change to happen faster. I'm giving her this B minus, though, because there's been a lot of frustration over the last few weeks. You know, on Monday, for example, she was in Trenton. She announced $4.9 billion, a, quote, major announcement on NORAD modernization. Despite repeated requests and questions about whether this was new money, she said, yes, it absolutely was new money. Well, then the department came back and said, oh, no, that was actually already announced in the budget. Then on top of that, the announcement was 11 o'clock on Monday, followed by a news release that didn't come out for more than 12 hours, followed by a backgrounder that came out almost 48 hours later, and then the speech was finally posted today. And there have been some issues here. There weren't a lot of details. They weren't prepared for this major announcement, and it was sort of similar. There wasn't a lot of explanation a couple weeks earlier about why we were at Cheyenne Mountain, why NORAD was part of it. Obviously, now we have a little bit of more of an understanding, but I think that on that specific aspect, the modernization, there hasn't really been a lot of communication from the department on some of these key issues.
Carl, your grade for Anita Anand.
Yeah, I think that investing billions in defense is still a feather in the cap of Anita Anand. I mean, Canada held steady under a lot of pressure to meet the 2% payments to NATO when tensions were at their highest and public pressure was at the highest with Ukraine, and they held course largely because I think this type of spending isn't popular. But I actually gave Anita Anand a B, largely because I think the test still has yet to be determined. There was another former Supreme Court Justice Arbour earlier that said that the Canadian Armed Forces need to do something to stamp out the sexual misconduct. And the types of things that need to be done are moving some of the prosecutions and some of the policing of sexual assault over to the private sector. This is one of the key recommendations. This is also one of the trickiest recommendations with the major backlog right. that's in the civilian court system right now. So I think that I'm giving a B, but this is more like a midterm grade right now, with the real grade to be determined by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Let me just stay with you, Carl. Mark Miller, the Crown Indigenous Relations Minister, he had a big file, and I know I just got a minute and a half here, but what's your grade for him and why?
I gave Mark Miller a D. I don't want my friends to know that I gave him such a high grade. While I think he has a tricky file, I think there are things like border crossing rights. He was in Six Nations 4 weeks ago. There's a community-based private language school that needs $30 million in repairs. He was walking through a building that was falling over, and he couldn't give any money to the people of Six Nations for a language immersion school that helps youth recover language that was lost because of residential school. So I'm giving a D, and that's about as generous as I could give for this minister.
Wow. Wow. Annie, you're giving him a B. Why?
So I looked at it from a more large perspective. So I'm taking a look at sort of his mandate letter. And if you look at the mandate letter, there's obviously a lot that he hasn't done, but there are some things that he has done. And, you know, the number one priority on that mandate letter was to help communities grieve, find their loved ones, and heal and provide additional assistance to help with burial sites at unmarked graves. And there was a significant amount of money in the budget for that. And the minister does seem to be handling this with, you know, a lot of sensitivity and care. So from sort of an outsider's perspective, it does appear that he's really caring and trying to make a difference here, and he does stop for a lot of questions. Although I do agree with Carl, there's obviously a lot that is not getting done. For example, in his mandate letter, it talks about the need to fully implement the UN Declaration on Indigenous Rights. That hasn't been done yet. There is some money that's going towards it, but it hasn't been done. There are, you know, compensation for children taken from their homes in foster care. That was part of the mandate letter. Right. That deal has now been reached. They were forced into it, but it's still in the progress.
Well, tough grades. Annie Bergeron Oliver, Carl Dockstader. Interesting grades, tough grades, and it should be tough for all ministers. I appreciate that. That is your Power Play Day in Politics. Thanks so much for watching, everyone. Boy, does it go fast. We'll be back here in 23 short hours. Hug your loved ones, and we'll see you tomorrow. Have a good night. Thank you.